Well, the hour has come. Let's bring the Jobs and Economic Development Committee to order. We have minutes to do. So, and I think there's a quorum. So, President Ward, would you move the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of the minutes as presented, aye. Signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Minutes are done. We have one thing on the agenda today, and it, I have to say, you know, I've been on this committee for 14 years, and this is a new piece to the Jobs and Economic Development Committee, a new part of the portfolio, the Rural Finance Authority. It is a loan program, and we've asked them to come in today and give us a little bit of a overview of the of what it does. It is an economic development tool for Greater Minnesota, and contrary to what's being said out on the Twitter and social media feeds, I am not out to destroy the ag community by having this in my particular committee. I find it kind of amusing. My record.
It doesn't show that a bit.
Yeah, my record is I've really reached out and tried to be encompassing of Greater Minnesota and its economic development, for the very fact that my family comes from a small town in western Minnesota. I still have relatives out there. Whom I visit. I understand what the Greater Minnesota's issues. I don't understand them like someone from Greater Minnesota, but I have a good grasp of them, and I work very hard.
Thank you.
To understand them. So I don't appreciate being accused of something prior to it actually happening. You know, judge me with my actions. Judge my this committee with our actions, not with your perceptions. And the good thing is, having checked, that's coming from this committee.
Thank you.
It's not coming from the people on this committee. It's coming from people who have never been on this committee and have no understanding of what we do. So having said that, I hope we're being televised and this goes out across the state. So with that, unless there's some response to my little tirade, which, you know, I get to do that as chair, I'd like to welcome some people from the Department of Ag, the committee, and I'm told that you were a legislator at one time, so welcome back.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Borbloom, Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I served in the Minnesota House in 1986, or 85 and 86, and it was in 1986 that this loan program was established, so I have some history with this program. I served on a conference committee that helped create it, and I'm happy today to be here in front of your committee to talk more about how the program has worked and the I think the success that we've enjoyed, because it has met the legislative intent.
Well, thank you. So, without any further ado, I don't know who is going to explain the... Well,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Could you please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name's Greta Gauthier. I am with the Department of Agriculture, the Director of Government Relations. I know some of you from other committees, but this is the first time I've ever come before this committee. And with me here is also Ryan Rolls, and Ryan actually runs the Rural Finance Authority program, so he'll be answering some questions later on. And Mr. Chairman, just before we get started, I want to say that we at the Department of Agriculture welcome the opportunity to come before this committee and to talk to some members who might not know about RFA, about what the Rural Finance Authority has done. We're very proud of it, and we're glad to have an opportunity to speak to members that we haven't maybe had the opportunity to brief on this before. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Borbloom, who will run us through our PowerPoint. You also have a copy of our most recent annual report. We're more than happy to get more data. Weren't sure exactly what you wanted, but please let us know. And without further ado, we'll begin.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Borgman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, just some background on the program, and then the PowerPoint will highlight again the history of the Rural Finance Authority, some of the source of funds that we use for the loan programs, and then again the type of financial assistance that we offer farmers and the type of farmers that are eligible to receive funds under the program. Mm-hmm. But in 1986, what the state of Minnesota was facing at that time was some very adverse financial conditions in the farm economy. There were many farmers that were carrying real estate loans. The loan balances that they were carrying exceeded the value of the land that was securing that loan. And so this was an incentive or an effort by the Minnesota legislature to encourage agriculture lenders to refinance those loans that they were carrying on the books, because those loans were undersecured, and from a farmer's perspective, again, they had a loan balance that exceeded the value of the land. Well, the model that the Rural Finance Authority uses to offer the financial assistance essentially says that the state would buy 45% of a qualifying loan, in other words, share some of the credit risk with that ag lender, encouraging them to refinance. The other benefit would be then to the farmer. The interest rate that the Rural Finance Authority offers would be at a lower rate than what prevailing interest rates were. And interest rates at that time were much, much different than they are today. They were in the double digits, like 14%, 12% on real estate loans. Commodity prices were much, much less at that time than they are today. So it was a very difficult time for farmers to essentially cash flow these real estate loans. So we'll go through the PowerPoint just to probably got about 20 slides here, and it could take about 15 minutes. Please feel free to interrupt or ask questions. I've got Ryan Rollis here, who is our senior loan officer. He handles these loan programs and understands them very well. We've got an excellent working relationship with about 400 participating lenders throughout the state of Minnesota. So we have what we call as a participation agreement or a contract with about 400 lenders that work with us in partnership to administer and offer this program. Well, the purpose again is to essentially develop the state's ag resources by extending credit on farm real estate. We carry out this purchase effort by purchasing a participation interest in qualifying loans. As I mentioned, it was established in 1986 in response to the farm crisis of the 80s or adverse financial conditions. The Rural Finance Authority is governed by an 11-member board. There are six members that are public members that are chosen by the governor, and then there's five agency heads. The five agency heads are Commissioner from Agriculture, Minnesota Management and Budget, the State Auditor, Department of Commerce, and Department of Employee and Economic Development. And the Commissioner of Agriculture acts as the chair of the board. The types of loan programs that we offer really are directed toward entry-level or beginning farmers, livestock producers, and then farmers who are facing some financial adversity. Those are primarily the three targets, three audiences that use the program. One of the qualifications of any of the farmers that participate in the program is that a majority of their income has to come from farming. Many of our farm families, we know probably about even 75% of them have off-farm income or part-time employment. That's certainly allowed under the program, but we do ask that they actively be engaged in the farm business. We sometimes make loans to people who are in transition that want to come back to the farm or maybe went to college and come back, and we would encourage them to do so under this loan program. At that time, they may not own or have a majority of income from farming, but they can qualify for that later. The goal is to help with rural economic development. We partner with about 400 ag lenders, as I mentioned, to do this. One of our program goals is to make sure that we have strong performance measures, and I can share a little bit more information about that later on. But let me just step back and talk a little bit about the rural economic development part of this piece. One thing about the program is that if you look at economic development in many rural areas, begins with farm families. The farm families, if you look at the farm business management records, I'm just looking or remembering from about a year ago, the average farmer in Minnesota spends about $800,000 And that money goes for feed, seed, fuel, fertilizer. It goes for machinery and equipment and building improvements. It's spent on real estate purchases. It's spent on family living expenses and cars and insurances, things of that nature. So when you look at the 81,000 farm families or farmers in Minnesota, there's a huge economic impact, and it's the fact that the money that they spend is spent in rural areas and rural communities and for the items that I previously mentioned. So that's where, if we can help young farmers again to enter this business and to be successful in this business, then we feel that we have a role in encouraging economic development. We've had a very good success with the program over the years. From 1986 to 2012, we've issued over 2,700 loans, $189 million in loan participation. Our default rate would be the envy of most ag lenders anywhere in the state. And I worked 14 years as an ag lender, and many times I'd have a loan portfolio where the default rate or the delinquency rate might be about 2.5 or 3% or something like that. In this case, the portfolio is less than 1%. I think there's a couple reasons for that, primarily because of the diversity of the loans in the portfolio, and also the lenders that originate these loans are really bringing quality loans to the Rural Finance Authority. Some of them maybe don't have a lot of credit history, but they've got good character. They're like second and third generation families that have a good long working relationship with either a credit union or a bank or a farm credit office. And so we see excellent quality loans that come in the door. Go ahead. The funding for the Rural Financial Authority is really part of the Constitution, the Minnesota Constitution, under Article 11, Section 5. There's a provision in there that the public debt may be contracted to develop the state's agricultural resources by extending credit on real estate security in the manner and on the terms and conditions prescribed by law. You know, this was the provision in the Constitution that we looked at in 1986 to help figure out a way that we could help, again, restructure, refinance many of these farm real estate loans, again, loan balances for exceeding the value of the property. We really have several loan programs, and I'll walk through some of those programs in the upcoming slides. But the source of funds that the Rural Finance Authority uses are three different sources. The primary source of funds is the sale of general obligation bonds. The legislature will give authority. We come to the legislature about every other year and ask for some authorization to sell bonds. And so under that one, that is one of our source of funds. Another one is just simply a general fund appropriation, an appropriation that is used to capitalize a revolving loan account, and the repayments on those loan participations go back to that revolving loan account. And then a third source of funds is what we call federal tax-exempt bonds, and those are known as AGGIE bonds. And the authority, just so I can get that on the record, the authority for the federal tax-exempt bonds, or the allocation of that, is under Chapter 474A.061. And the bond allocation usually goes to manufacturing, housing, or public facilities pools, and the Rural Finance Authority has an allocation in the small issue pool under Chapter 474A. The state bonding, again, is based on the constitutional authorization. This last year, we asked for $33 million to continue loan programs that are financed from the general obligation bonds. There are five programs that are funded from the bond proceeds. We coordinate the sale of bonds with the Minnesota Management and Budget. They sell the bonds on our behalf. Once the bonds are sold, we deposit those funds into an account that we hold. And then we use the monies in that account to buy the participation or the 45% amount that we purchase. The unique thing about this program is that the principal and interest receipts on the loan participations are used to repay the debt service on the bonds. So the program is completely user financed. There is no general fund support. There's no other monies that support this program. Essentially, what we're doing is we're passing along the advantage of a discounted interest rate to the borrower, and at the same time sharing the credit risk with the ag lender. So that's why this program is working as well as it does. There are five programs that are funded from the general obligation bonds. They are the basic loan program, the restructure one, the ag improvement loan program, the livestock expansion, and under that basic program, we actually have what's called a seller-assisted loan program, and I'll walk through those and talk about the differences of those. The basic loan program is essentially one that can be used for the purchase of real estate. Many of these loans that we see that come into our office are for the purchase of a farm site or a building site. It can be, you know, up to 160 acres of bare land as well. Many times there are family members that wants to come back and enter into the farm business. We have a net worth obligation on that. It's indexed for inflation. The net worth right now cannot exceed $428,000. The maximum amount that the rural finance would carry would be $300,000, or that 45% up to $300,000. The bank can make any amount of the loan that they want. The interest rate on our portion is 2.75%. The loans can be amortized for like 20 years and in some cases 30 years, and Ryan can explain the difference there. But we do ask for a balloon payment or get the loan paid back to us after 10 years. The reason for that 10-year balloon payment is that allows us then to use the money to repay the debt service on the bonds. And after 10 years, we feel that a farmer should be in a position to continue the operation without our assistance. There's an example of a basic loan program. If you're looking at a $200,000 purchase price, typically we'd like to see about a 5% or 10% down payment, $40,000 in this case, $160,000 remaining, and then the split you see down there at 45% and 55%. The RFA portion would be at $72,000. That interest rate that you see on the lender is quite typical of the interest rates that we're seeing today, 5.5%, 6%, which are very, very friendly, favorable interest rates compared to what we, again, saw some of the previous years. The Ag Improvement Loan has got the same model, same formula. It can be used for the purchase of livestock building, grain handling facilities, machine storage, manure systems. The history on this program, it was established back in the mid to early 1990s, and it was largely to upgrade dairy facilities or dairy barns, grade A milking facilities. And again, the net worth is the same at $428,000. The 45% participation is the same, and the $300,000 is the same. You might notice a slight difference in the interest rate at 3.25% versus 2.75%. The reason for that is we have some of our bond funds are subject, some are either taxable and some are tax exempt. And for the Ag Improvement Loan Program, we usually use some taxable bond proceeds. And so we pay a little higher interest rate because we pay a higher interest rate. We capture a higher interest rate on the loan. This is another example of the Ag Improvement Loan Program. Under that one, we'd like to see a 20% down payment, because largely these are established farmers that have capacity to make that down payment. And again, if you look at a total credit of $480,000, the RFA portion would be at $216,000. Again, our interest rate at 3.25%. The Livestock Expansion Loan Program, this was one passed probably in the late 90s. It was used to help farmers who were more going towards specialized livestock operations, especially our dairy farmers and some of the hog operations. We saw they're used for cattle barns, robotic milkers. Net worth, again, there is a much higher net worth at $806,000, because we want to make sure that we can direct this program to farmers who are more established. And later on this afternoon, I know Ryan has got a handout that can show you the profile of the kind of farmers that are using these programs. Another unique feature about this is we got a higher level of the participation at $400,000 versus the $300,000, and the interest rate is again the higher at 3.75 versus 2.75, again because we use taxable bond proceeds to finance this. And then last is the restructure program. This was actually the first program that the legislature authorized, and so it's named the Restructure 2. There were some modifications to it back in the 90s. But again, the net worth is still at that $806,000, the 45% participation up to $400,000. So you see, again, in all these loan programs, the same model, the same kind of a footprint that's used on all these five programs, and again, that we partner with the local ag lender to buy a 45% of the qualifying loan, again, and we carry that. And here's an example, again, of that, of about $350,000. We'll see these kind of loans that come in. Recently, we've seen them in dairy operations, especially because, you know, with the high feed costs and some of the swings that we've seen in the dairy industry in the last 3 to 5 years. I know 2008 and 2009 were some pretty difficult times for the dairy industry. And some of those farms tried to get, you know, go along, and kind of they carried a hangover with them for about 2 or 3 years. And so we're starting to see some of those loans come in. They essentially are taking the top half of the balance sheet where they may have some open accounts or unpaid bills or things of that nature. Things are just simply not working out. And if they got value in their real estate, you can refinance the equity in the real estate, stretch the loan terms out over a longer term a period, reduce the interest rate, improve the cash flow. So it works very, very well for farmers who need to have that kind of help. But as a lender, I would not rush to this, and I don't see a lot of lenders doing that. I know farmers are resistant to doing that because it does capture some of the equity in your real estate in order to do this. You're right. These are examples of some of the revolving loan programs, or there's a couple of them that are missing on here, but I'll just walk through these real quickly. Livestock expansion, the value-added stock loan program, disaster recovery, methane digester. A lot of these programs were kind of an outcome of some of the needs that the legislature had over the years. And these are, again, our revolving funds, and I believe we've got about, what's the amount of money we have in that program, Ryan, do you remember?
Is it about $1.2 million.
Okay. So we have about $1.2 million in a revolving pool that is available to fund all of these different loan programs. The first one is one of the older ones that was passed back in the early 90s, and a lot of that was directed toward ethanol plants. The state of Minnesota was building many ethanol plants throughout, and it was an opportunity to help farmers buy stock or equity in those ethanol plants. So this was a value-added stock loan program. Today it's also used not only for ethanol plants but for wind energy facilities or any value-added facility. And we've made about $2.9 million in this loan program over the years. There's another livestock equipment loan program. We did have some interest about 10 years ago where farmers were looking for some assistance to help buy equipment. We had many of our farm families in Minnesota that do not own land but rent land, and they want to start in the farm business, and yet they need to have help purchasing some equipment, and so this is a loan program. It has the same model that we have with our other programs. We buy 45% of a qualifying loan up to $40,000. The interest rate is just a fixed 3% interest rate on that. This is an example of the livestock equipment loan program. Again, the same kind of format that you see on the others. The disaster recovery loan, this was an outcome of a tornado in St. Peter and Nicollet County in 1989, and some of you probably lived through that and endured that. But this was a program. I remember the legislature was in session at that time. It was a March tornado. There was heavy damage to many of the, not only the cities, but many of our farm families, and so it was an effort to help them recover from that tornado. Since that time, we've had floods and droughts and many other, you know, natural disasters, and so this is used to help either clean up debris after a flood or a tornado, replace feedstock in a drought, or other input costs, and make some building repairs, you know, those kind of things that just simply are not covered by insurance. We do ask that if a person participates in this program that they carry insurance first and show evidence of insurance. But what this program would do is help finance the gap that is not met by insurance to, again, fully repair or replace a building. And this is an example of the net worth on that is about $806,000, the higher limit. $50,000 is a qualifying loan amount. 45% of that amount is the amount that we would finance. The last program we'll talk about is the Agri Bond Program. And this program is probably one of the least used programs, but it does have, I think, one of the best benefits for beginning farmers. Under this program, we have access, the Rural Finance Authority has access to federal tax-exempt bonds. And essentially, the Rural Finance Authority will sell a bond to a bondholder. The bondholder might be the bank, and then we use the cash proceeds from the sale of the bond to make the loan. That's essentially what we do. And the purchase of the proceeds from the bond sales can either be used to purchase farm real estate, breeding livestock, make agriculture improvements, or machinery. And this is a unique thing about this. In under this program, and go to the next slide, I think I might show a little bit. I guess it doesn't, so go back. Hit the back arrow.
Yep.
Under this program, the way this works is the state chartered bank, the interest earned on the loan would not be subject to taxes. So let me say that again. The interest earned on a loan for a state chartered bank would not be subject to taxes. And in exchange for that obligation not to pay interest, the bank then, or the lender, is asked to offer a lower interest rate to the beginning farmer. People or individuals that are not related can actually carry or do finance a contract for deed under the Aggie Bond Program as well. So the bondholder can either be a person carrying a contract for deed, or the bondholder can be an ag lender. Farm Credit System is not eligible for this program because they already have the benefit of tax-exempt bonds for their source of funds. So, the unique thing about this program is that a state chartered bank or an individual does not pay taxes on the interest earned on this loan. In exchange for that benefit, they can give the farmer a lower interest rate. A unique thing about this, too, again, is it can be used to purchase machinery and breeding livestock in addition to real estate. So a lot of times we'll encourage people to take a look at this program for first-time entry-level farmers. So I'm going to take a break. I'll stop with that and answer any questions. And certainly, again, Ryan Rollis is our senior loan officer. He's the first contact at our office and knows the program very well and can answer questions about the loan.
I'd like to ask some questions.
Oh, right ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. I didn't realize we had this program. Better get to my page where I have these questions. Hang on. My first one is, at what point do you get involved? At what point are you brought into the process? Do you sell to the end user, or are you brought in by the lenders, by the ag lenders?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, Representative Leidiger. Yep. We enter the process when we receive a call or an application from the ag lender. Our customer is the ag lender, and it can be a farm credit office, it can be an independent bank, or it can be a credit union. So any one of those entities will call us, and the relationship that we have is with the agriculture lenders. So the customer, they don't see us. They many times may not even know we're there. The customer essentially walks into their ag lender, makes a credit request to the lender. We receive about a 3-page application with supporting documentation. The supporting documentation that we require is no different than what that ag lender would require. For example, a financial statement, cash flow, 3 years of tax returns. We like to see a lender narrative or a narrative about the nature of the purpose of the loan, the security, and that type of thing.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Do you have to come back to the legislature for every new program, or are you just, what kind of authority? As the circumstances change, you evolve or develop a different program?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we do. The net worth eligibility is indexed, so we don't come back to the legislature for that. We do come back to the legislature to modify either the level of participation or the dollar amount. We may come back to legislature to modify an eligibility requirement under the program, but we'll also come to the legislature to ask for a new authorization to sell bonds. The programs that are funded from the sale of general obligation bonds, those are not revolving loan accounts. Those are bonds are sold, and the principal and interest is used to repay the debt service on the bonds, and then once that's done, the book is closed on that bond sale, so we're constantly coming back every other year to ask for a new authorization to get new bond authorization, essentially.
Okay. And one more, Mr. Chair. The I can't find it. If an owner wants to develop pieces of his property, commercial development, does that program is that funded? I was trying to kind of read between the lines here, and I don't know if it really fits the mission. I'm talking about, you know, houses or
right
sort of commercial development.
Right. Yeah.
Well, but if it's a owner that's developing his own property.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the loan program is directed toward farmers or people who are in production agriculture. Value added for commercial development or commercial. We've had inquiries over the year whether or not this could be used for value added agriculture at commercial properties, and the answer is no. It's primarily for development of agriculture resources. They need to be secured by real estate loans, those loans that are, again, the ones that are funded from general obligation bonds. There's a condition that those loans be secured by real estate. So commercial development is outside the scope or the eligibility of the program.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Borblum, on the slide that talks about agricultural improvement example, you mentioned under the borrower's 20% down. Is that a cash down payment, or are you looking for a collateral assignment on those as well?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, the 20% down payment in many cases will be cash because these are farm families that have capacity to put cash into the deal. If they have equity in an existing piece of property, then that certainly qualifies. We only look for a 20% down payment under that program, and it's up to the lender and the customer to determine how they meet that obligation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the following page, under restructuring for loans, reference is made to a net worth not to exceed $806,000. What year is that pegged to?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we do adjust that on an annual basis, and actually we'll be making that adjustment in February this year. So every year it is adjusted to the Consumer Price Index, and so that will likely go up a little bit this coming year. So that is adjusted annually in February.
Maybe, can I ask this question in between? $870,000 of net worth is more than most in my particular district. So, dealing with farmers, could you explain why it's pegged at $870,000 worth of net worth versus, you know, the guy down the street from me who's got a net worth of $100,000? That just seems like a lot of money that the state is actually helping somebody with, but as my cousin Bob would say, no, it's not.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, those are great questions. I think the hard reality is that farming is a very capital-intensive business. It's not just the real estate, but it's the buildings and the livestock equipment that goes with a large, whether it's a dairy operation, large or small hog operation. So they're very capital-intensive. A lot of the farms are multifamily farming operations, that we see it's not just one individual, even though the individual be borrowing the money, but it may be supporting two or three farm families. So, you know, there's always room to debate the level or the eligibility requirement. When the program started, I could look back and give you some history about, you know, back in the 80s, obviously, the net worth was much different then than it was today. But over the course of the, you know, 25 years of the program, that net worth has been adjusted, and I believe was probably in the early 90s that the legislature said, or maybe mid-90s, well, we'll just index it, because it got to be quite an interesting discussion about what is the appropriate level of eligibility or net worth. You know, who do we want to help? Who do we want to assist? And so this is where we are today.
I'm sorry, Representative Bulger, were you done?
Just one.
Go right ahead.
Sure, thank you. Relevant to Aggie bonds, if you do the simple math on the number, the $39 million loan portfolio with 279 farmers, you come up with an average loan balance of just under $140,000. Would that be representative of the whole portfolio, or is that a true representation of the largest loans that you make, or the smallest, or what would be the bell curve on the loans that are in the portfolio?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn that over to Ryan Rollis to answer that question.
Could you introduce yourself for the record and please proceed?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm Ryan Rollis. I am the senior loan officer for the Rural Finance Authority. My main job is I am the contact with the ag bankers that we deal with, and I review all of the files in conjunction with Commissioner Borboom for the loans that we do approve.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. The Aggie bond, I would say the average loan is about that, between $100,000 and $200,000. The numbers that you got, and those are going back from the inception of Aggie bond to where the numbers were probably lower, to now coming today where the purchases that we see are larger, so the dollars that are being asked for today are on the larger end. So through the course of the program, that's really just the average of it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Assistant Commissioner Borboom, you said that you have to come for annual reauthorization of bonds. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guthrie, we do come probably every other year during the off years. I mean, this is a budget cycle, so we may come to you next year with a request for bond authorization.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, does that mean that this committee will have that bill before us? That's correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Guthrie, that would be my understanding.
Mr. Chairman, every time we get something new, we got to find out what we have to do.
That would be true.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, usually that request, after it's been heard by your committee, for example, and it has many times in the past been rolled into the bonding bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner Borboom, a couple of things. You stated that it's the case that the borrower, the farmer, may not see RFA personnel. I'm curious to know then, is the borrower signing documents? Where is the
yeah.
connection between RFA and the farmer, the banker?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I may have Ryan answer that as well.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative, the connection with that is RFA has their own loan agreement and note. And so upon approval, we send the ag lender a rough draft of that note. All of our forms are on the website, so the bank will type up their final loan document, print that off, and that is what the borrower signs on behalf of RFA and their loan commitment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I'm curious to know about, if a loan goes bad, and forgivability, those types of things, how do you deal with those situations?
Mr. Chair, Representative, our loan losses we work through with the bank. So if it starts out, if loan is 30 days past due, I contact the bank or ask them the status of the loan. If it further continues in delinquency, we work with the bank through that. If there is a loss and the bank gets the property back as in a foreclosure, then we agree to list it at a certain price, see what we have for offers, and if there is a loss, we agree of what the acceptable price is, and then we present that to our RFA board, and then they approve the charge-off for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's an agreement between RFA and the lender on the agreed loss portionality.
Yep.
With each.
Mr. Chair, representative, yes. It's the 55-45 that Mr. Borboom stated throughout. That's usually how we share a loss. So if there was a $1,000 loss, the bank would take $550. We would take $450 of it.
Thank you.
And again, the prerogative of the chair here is with the bad rap that government gets, why don't you send a letter to each one of these people that is getting a loan saying, a loan subsidized by your state tax dollars? just a thought. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I might be the...
a bill yet this year.
I think I might be the only legislator here who had the opportunity to serve with then-Representative Borboom through those tough years when we were dealing with... farm foreclosures, and now we're dealing with other kinds of foreclosures actually in the Housing Committee, and I am going to have a question about that. But before I get to that, I came up with a question listening to Representative Leidiger's question and your response, which I found confusing. I thought he was asking about whether or not there could be development on the farm with the kinds of loan opportunities you have, and you said no, but you do have value-added stock loans, and you do have other ways that there can be improvements on the farm, and it seems to me that farmers who are doing value-added facilities on their own property would be eligible under some of your programs here to participate. So I think the answer to your question should be a little more complicated. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I think you're right, and I may have misunderstood the question, but yes, for some, I'd have to go back to the eligibility, and Ryan can explain this better, like if you're doing a grain handling facility or manure management, or if you're doing wind generation on your farm, that would qualify. What I wanted to make sure is that we do get inquiries from commercial entities that are not farming, are not in production agriculture, to make sure to clarify that if you're not in production ag, that we do not finance any value added there, but if it's on the farm, it would be within those eligibility criteria that are listed on that slide.
So, Mr. Chairman, for example, I don't see it listed here, but I assume adding greenhouse or high tunnels or some of that kind of farming operation that's going on so much today might also qualify?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, that would be a qualifying entity because greenhouses... I think we might have even financed, did we do a greenhouse? That would qualify because, again, they're in the business of production agriculture. So if they're doing hydroponic tomatoes or carrots or whatever it is, that would qualify.
And then also value added, so if they were processing their produce on the farm. Or I see that you also have under the value added that they can help purchase stock in a cooperative.
Right.
So it seems to me like, this just... warms my heart to think of some opportunities here that may or may not be known by some of the folks that are doing a fair amount these days, the development of farming, some in the rural area, some on the edge of the city, and even ones in the city, which leads me to my next question, which is, so this is the Rural Finance Authority. We do have urban farms that are evolving now, and so I'm wondering, is this limited to whatever rural means today, or is it... any sort of farm production.
Rural, about 4 acres in my district that have a greenhouse on.
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, the only criteria that we've done any farms in Hennepin County or Ramsey County, but the primary criteria is that they're. Main source of income is from production agriculture. And urban farming certainly would qualify, but they'd have to, again, it would have to be their primary source of income and have to fall within the eligibility requirements that we currently have. And So as long as they're in production agriculture.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that particular part, so an urban farming cooperative could be eligible?
Probably the best example is, Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, an urban farm cooperative, if under that value-added stock loan program, that might be the better way to go, because under that program, if 10 farmers decided that they wanted to create this co-op, what they could do is use this program to buy shares in that co-op and create equity, and then hopefully have enough confidence with the equity then to get it to commercial financing.
Thank you. And this is a little different question, Mr. Chair. This was, and I thought I had heard, and I know my staff from the Housing Committee has been in touch with you a bit. I don't think it was with you specifically, but some of this financing can be used for the housing portion of the farmer's property as well, right? And so I'm wondering, do you do much housing? You know, we have issues with repair or, you know, construction even of the housing portion of the farm.
Mr. Chair, Representative, when we finance a home, almost in all cases, it's in conjunction with a farmer purchasing a farm site that would also have, a bar or a building for livestock or a grain facility for the crops. In almost all cases, there will be other ag facilities related to it that will help drive the ag income.
And then, Mr. Chairman, is the interest rate on that? What is the interest rate on that sort of housing opportunity?
Mr. Chair, Representative, our beginning farmer loan program is at 2.75%, and that's fixed for 10 years right now.
Thank you.
You had a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a general question. Being that all of our loans here in this program are a public-private partnership and everything else, and, you know, the banking crisis and the increased regulation that came along with it, two-part question. One, has it reduced your loss ratios? And two, has it made it more difficult for you to do business and make loans out there in the farm country?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the answer is no. We've had state chartered banks, federal charter banks, credit unions. They have been highly regulated over the years and really did not fall into the financial conditions that you see or hear about in the news. It's the investment banks are the ones that really got themselves into trouble. And when you look at many of our community banks, they are smart enough and regulated enough that they did not get into financial trouble. There may be some that have a little more misery level than others, but for the most part, they've been heavily regulated. There's strong oversight. Strong capitalization on those, and so we've not had any negative or adverse impact because of that. We've actually, right now, we're looking for loan activity, and we've had a decline in loan activity because banks are quite healthy and they're sitting on a lot of cash and interest rates are low, so they're happy to make the loan and probably don't need us as much as they did 10 years ago.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gunther, you have another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Assistant Commissioner Borbroom, when we think of selling our commodity to foreign countries, who traditionally does that? Does the U.S. Minnesota Trade Office, does the commodity companies like Cargill, or do they do it in conjunction with the federal commodity offices?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, I don't know if I quite get the focus of your question, but farmers today have various avenues to market corn, soybeans, wheat, hogs, dairy. A lot of that in our agency, we're part of our mission is to strengthen our ag economy. We have an ag marketing and development division that does reach out to Indonesia, to China, to Taiwan, some of those countries, and look for opportunities for dairy products, pork products. But you know, if you're just simply selling commodities like corn and soybeans, it's just a matter of the relationship you have with your local co-op elevator.
Okay, so no U.S. agency is involved then?
No.
Or Minnesota agency is involved?
Not, no, Mr. Chairman, Representative Guthrie, no, not on a routine basis, regular basis. We are not involved on most of the farm sale of ag commodities. It's just a transaction, again, between a producer and a local elevator. We're available or on call. So if a farmer has a specialized product or wants to seek a new market opportunity, we're there to help with that.
Okay, thank you.
I guess it's my turn now. I do have a number of questions. It's interesting reading through the sheets here, but because I have a couple of questions. One on the wind energy, and I'd like you to kind of expand on what your loans do for those particular things and some of the requirements. And I'd actually like a little bit more information on your beginning farmers program and how that works and how many beginning farmers you you work with. And then the average size of the farm, because frankly, a 5,000, a 10,000, a 15,000 acre farm, I would bet is a bit out of your range, but maybe it's not, and I'd like to know.
Yeah.
Because I think as a state, I want to help young people get into farming,
yeah.
And that would more likely than not be a small farm.
Yeah.
Then the one thing I would, so I've got four questions here, three questions and one comment. It may have sounded like I was being humorous, but I have, you know, I have a fish farm in my district, and I have someone who is contemplating a 10 to 15 acre greenhouse in my district that would supply, and they've said they could supply XYZ to almost half of the grocery stores in town. I think that would almost fall under production ag.
Yep.
I'm just wondering, does that, because we're in the urban area, does that preclude them? And if so, you know, you should look at that, how you get to those people, because I know Representative Clark has something similar, not quite mm-hmm. at that scale.
Yeah.
But that's just something down there. So I'd actually like you to expand a little bit on what you do with the wind energy facilities for farms and why, how, and where, and a little bit more on the beginning farmers, and then kind of your average acreage.
Yeah.
A lot of questions.
Yeah. No, Mr. Chairman, thank you for those questions, and I'm going to ask Ryan to cover the question on wind farms, expand more about the type of assistance we offer beginning farmers, and then also profile some of those farm families that we help. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, just a point of reference for the committee, since Department of Ag is new to some of you. The federal government keeps statistics on the number of farms in every state, and as the commissioner mentioned earlier, there are 81,000 farms in Minnesota. The average size of those farms is 320 acres. So just to give you a background.
Mr. Chair, I'll start with wind energy. Wind energy for us is more, we have financed them before, if it's mainly to improve the efficiency of the farm, mainly to conserve electricity. We don't really, the sale of wind energy on our programs, we don't look at really as ag income. So wind energy or the towers, majority of them are the smaller ones, which just help support energy costs, not the big, huge ones that you see out in a row when you drive through the country. Does that help on that one?
Always end up with more questions, but we'll get to that a little bit.
Okay.
So,
I will refer you to the RFA annual report. On page 5, we have a breakout of all of our loan programs. And the first line there is the basic beginning farmer. And for the fiscal year of 2012, we helped 35 beginning farmers for a total of $4 million, or about $4.2 million. In the last column there, you'll see the total since the program inception, 1,644 farmers for a total of $98 million is what we've done since that program began. The other main program that we do have is the Restructure 2 program. And you'll see for fiscal year 2012, we had 16 loans, so not as many files, but the dollars were $4.4 million. And so in total, 442 farmers for a total of $42 million since that program began. So the basic beginning farmer and the restructure programs are the two main files that we have. If you can go to the next page, there's a RFA customer profile. So that would be page 6 of that packet. On that, you can see that it will give you an average age, the average net worth of the folks that we have, and then kind of the operations that they farm in. So for the basic farm, that's usually our younger farmer. The net worth is roughly in the 200,000s, and majority of that is row crop farming for what we have. The Aggie bond, you'll also see. The average age is, you know, it depends on the amount of files we got, but in 2011, the average age was 23. And the restructure, you'll get down to that. That is more of a farm that runs into production issues, and they tend to be in their middle 40s. And a lot of times you can see on that, some are row crop, but a lot of it is dairy. And right now, the hog operators are having a tough time out there, too, so this year we might see an increase in hog operations. If you go to the last two pages, that will just kind of give you a map so you can see what areas you represent. You can kind of see how many loans we've issued for the programs in those areas.
You know, if you look, somebody earlier said that she didn't do any loans in Hennepin or Ramsey County. You're wrong.
All right.
Your friend.
Mr. Chairman, we stand corrected.
I think Representative Metz had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my apologies for being a little late today.
I didn't see it.
Well, I shouldn't have told you. So my question is, are banks doing a good job of letting people know if they're coming in for a loan from the bank that these services are available? And is there any law in place right now that makes sure that they are letting those people know to help a small business owner get started about these services?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Metz, our experience has been once the bank loan officer uses the program and finds out that we're pretty easy to work with, they'll come back and use us again and again. The stigma that sometimes is, well, it's a government program, a lot of paperwork, a lot of red tape, a lot of time, that's not the experience that we offer. We're quick to turn around the loan applications that come in our door. We develop a personal relationship. I would be honest, though, that there's room to improve the level of awareness. And Ryan has done a great job. He's been with us a couple years. During the summer months, he's on the road and simply calling on banks. We participate in some of their district meetings or regional meetings. We bring this PowerPoint along. We bring brochures along, talk about the way that we can help them, help their customers. And again, the third thing, I guess, is that there are some lenders I know right now, they may not have an appetite to sell their loans because they're sitting on cash and they'd like to just keep it for themselves and make the loan. And, you know, I'm certainly not criticizing them for that because it's just a good way for them to have some earnings.
Follow up, please, Mr. Sure. Chair. Thank you. Is there anything we could do to help make sure that, you know, they're letting their clients know about your services as well.
Well, thank you for asking. I'm Mr. Chairman, Representative Metz. I just think, your outreach and your newsletters and your weekly columns, things of that nature, certainly is a great way to, publicize the program. We've got an excellent website. If you're looking for some language or some bits of information that we can help you with on writing that, that'd be certainly one way. If you get out and talk to chamber groups or farm groups or any of those opportunities, good to talk about the program.
Thank you.
Fabian,
did you have a question? I did, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The eligibility requirements that you referred to, how are those put together? Is that something statutory that regulates that? Is that just the board of 11 people, I believe it is?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, yes, the eligibility requirements are set by the legislature, so legislature would have the opportunity if they wanted to make a change or modify those eligibility requirements. That is something that is within their jurisdiction to do that. Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this, I see Mr. Peterson is sitting here. Do you promote this program through your organization? Just a nod of your head would be sufficient unless the chair wants it on record.
How about if I phrase it this way? Commissioner, do you know if the Farmers Union and the Farmers Bureau, I think I got that right, promote your program?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy that they do. And I, Tom Peterson's been a very strong voice for this program and a very strong supporter of it. So both farm organizations and the commodity councils, the independent bankers, the Minnesota bankers, the Farm Credit Service offices. You take 400 agriculture lenders throughout the state of Minnesota, pretty much covers everyone that makes farm loans. So.
Just one, Mr. Chair, an editorial comment, if I may. The commissioner made reference to the community banks versus the investment banks being smart enough or regulated enough. I would defer to the smart enough. Thank you.
Yeah.
Community banks are smarter, or the investment bankers are smarter?
Yes.
A couple years ago, a clear answer.
Yeah.
President, you go on.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll get it one of these days. It's Norwegian. Don't hold it against me now.
I spelt my daughter's first name wrong, apparently. So she's complaining the other.
All right. Just a little question on the annual report. I mean, nice annual report and everything else, but do you guys normally, when you do an annual report, provide balance sheets, income statements, and things like that, which are more typical of an annual report? Because essentially we're in the banking business here.
Yep.
I was wondering about those particular statistics.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we do have financials. As a matter of fact, Steve Ernest is a director of our Budget and Finance Division, and we have not included a summary of the financials, but I think that's a great suggestion, and we have very detailed financial reports that we do on a quarterly basis, and if you have questions about the financial capacity or where we are right now, Steve can answer those questions, but your point is a good one, and we'd be happy to include a brief summary on the annual report.
Mr. Chair? Yes, I would appreciate that. I think it would give us a little more background.
Yeah.
And Representative Uglum, you'll find, as you go through the committees, many committees have financing functions, something similar to this. DEED has them all over, and Health and Human Services has a few that do something like this. So government helps a lot of people with low interest loans, students and everything
that's
else.
That's a good suggestion.
Are there any other questions? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was thinking back about the answer to the question on the interest rate for housing, a farm house, for example, and you mentioned that the response was 2.75%, but then I was looking back here, and the lender's rate is still up at 5.5%. So I guess the answer is 2.75 for part of it plus 5.5 for the other part of it. Is that the way that works?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's basically ascends to a blended rate. A lot of what you're seeing now after the housing market with Fannie and Freddie is they will not take a home loan if there is an agricultural building on the property. which leaves that these community banks have to finance these properties in-house. So with a young borrower trying to purchase this with the farm buildings, 45% of the loan has a 2.75% rate on it, and then whatever the bank rate may be is what's on the remaining 55%.
So it's, Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned, then it's a blended rate.
Correct.
I'm wondering how we account for that big of a spread. What is that just profit for the bank? Is that what we're taking care of here?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, every bank is different. We've seen, or I've seen, some institutions have had a 3.8% rate on properties, while others might still be charging 6.5%. It could be their cost of funds. It could be the strength of the borrower. There's a lot of different things that could go into it. But we don't have any, really any say to what the bank charges.
Mr. Chairman?
That's the Housing Committee. Representative
Clark. Yeah, I'm just thinking how, you know, maybe it would be something we could talk about legislatively to really help incentivize those banks who are willing to give the lower rates, especially with the, you know, the prime rate being so low right now. If you have any ideas about that, it just seems to me like we'd want to support or perhaps do more business with those banking or lending institutions, banker, whatever they are in that situation, to promote the ability of the farmer to be able to pay a lower interest rate. Just thinking about it, maybe you have some suggestions if we could talk about that in the future.
Seeing no further questions, I'll close with this particular comment. Thank you for all your information. I'm sure committee members will come up with other questions, and you've given your card to any number of them, and just a chance to meet all sorts of new members in the legislature. So, unless there's any further information, we are adjourned till Tuesday, right?
Yeah.